Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. It's Thursday and this is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. Tim, it's been a while since we've had this guest on with us.
Yes, it has been.
Thankfully, he's doing well. He's here back with us to talk about one of his more unique cases and one that he doesn't talk a lot about. He's here to chat with us. Dr. Barry Taff holds a doctorate in psychophysiology. My mind is running ahead of my mouth here, with a minor in biomedical engineering. He's a world-renowned parapsychologist who worked out of UCLA's former parapsychology lab from 1969 through 1978 as a research associate, and he was has been a part of our show, I think, since the beginning. He's popped in from time to time, Tim. Starting with the Entity case, the San Pedro haunting, and more. Mm-hmm. He's always our go-to guy when it comes to really strange encounters and stories. He's back with us tonight. Dr. Barry Taff, thank you for joining us.
That was my pleasure. Nice to hear your voice, Dave.
Well, let's get into this. I know you've kept up your blog as best you can, and that's at barrytaff.net, and we'll have a link up to that on today's show. One of the stories that you featured on there was this the aristocratic poltergeist case that you worked on. Why is this case one that you haven't really explored publicly much?
Well, a number of reasons. The woman in question, whose name is Susan, has a very unique and uncommon background. Her mother was a famous actress. Her father was a sort of a big wig in financing real estate and movies. And she didn't know who she was adopted, so she never knew who her parents were until 9 years ago. So long story short, in early 1976, got a call at the lab. I didn't take the call. Dr. Moss did. And she left a note when I came in the next morning, call this woman, this named Susan. Okay. So I come in and call her. Now she told me about strange things going on in her house. Okay. So I went out to her house in North Hollywood, California. And she was sharing this house with two other women, both older than her. Now, Susan was the petite, dirty blonde, blue-green eyes, more green than blue, really, really cute. But when I knew, okay, and when I met her, she looked familiar, but I couldn't place her. So she's talking about strange noises in the house, blood dripping from faucets and the shower heads, luminous fogs moving about the house, things appearing and disappearing, you know, apports. And, okay, so we're listening to her. And finally she looks at me, she goes, Barry, don't you remember me? And I went, and then she gave me her name when I knew her. We were early, young teenagers. Oh, okay. And she maturity did good for her, because when I first knew her, we were much young, 12 years earlier, she looked like a scrawny little mouse. And she evolved into something quite stunning. So I think that things are happening. She's telling us the previous tenants have had stuff going on. And this is a very strange case. My article on my website talks about, because it has all the earmarks of a classic poltergeist case. Susan turned out to have, was suffering from temporal lobe epilepsy, and she was not allowed to drive in the state of California because, you know, you have a seizure or whatever, you'll die and kill other people. The two other girls with her were not unattractive, but compared to Susan, they were ugly, even though they weren't. Susan could best be described as having a histrionic personality disorder, where any time something happened she didn't like, she would go into a fit and feign all these illnesses to get attention and get her way. And, you know, on top of that, she smoked like a fiend. She smoked 3 to 4 packs a day. And I remember when I kept bumping into her. We were teens, and I told her that she had an enlarged heart, and this is not a good idea. And she looked at me, yeah, okay, fine. So we're talking, and she tells me these amazing stories. She's playing her guitar. The guitar's pulled out of her hands. Something's been touching her and the other two girls. And then the more I talked to her, this case didn't begin and end in one visit. We were back there 5 or 6 times. Things began touching Susan and her two friends. Now, Susan began life as a heterosexual female, but she then transitioned after a couple of failed marriages with no children to becoming more of a, I guess, homosexual, a lesbian orientation. And, okay, a little odd 41 years ago, but hey, things like that happen. And so Susan got me some speaking engagements before a group called the California Association of Licensed Investigators, not paranormal investigators. These were private investigators that do look into crime. And, okay, talk some of the work we did in that area, whatever, and it got to know her a little better. And she was exotically beautiful, Susan, a very unusual combination. If I could reveal who her mother and father was, you'd understand why she was so attractive. And so more and more these things kept happening. And we saw some of the pictures they took, and one of them is actually on my website. And it's Christmas Day, 1975, Christmas morning. And it's a big Christmas tree, and she's opening presents, and other girls opening presents. And in the picture, there are these weird, like a luminous claw, like this weird luminous anomalies just perforating the picture. That shouldn't be there. No one saw anything, but this was common around them. And other pictures, which I couldn't put on the site, because if the family, her family, neither her biological or her adoptive parents are alive, but there's still a family structure throughout the country. And if very likely I'd be sued, and everyone who connected with us would be sued, so therefore I can't mention any names. But her parents were really worried, because even as a child, there were paranormal events going around, what we call telepathy and precognition. And Susan misinterpreted these as that she was a witch. And so the only craft she learned really was witchcraft, because she was obsessed with it. And broom riding, cauldron stirring, and the whole bit, and what I said in my article. So to get her way, she would cast love spells or whatever, to do things bad to people that went against her. She'd summon minions of the devil. I knew this when I first met her, and I'm like, oh, this woman's out of her mind. And so, you know, but years later, she seemed to be a lot more normal, at least I thought so. And the more we were present in that house, the more things escalated in terms of the nature of the events. At one point, we were holding a little seance, and one of Susan's hands became so hot you couldn't touch it, it hurt. The other hand became so cold it burned, like dry ice. And we could, what the? And then water started pouring out of her nose, samples of which we took. Fine, but it wasn't salt water, which is all that exists in the human body. It's only saline. Fresh water was coming out of her nose. And what's the source of that? So then one of her other friends living there, a woman.
Well, Barry, you're very matter of fact of this. When you're seeing this kind of phenomena, I mean, is it disturbing to you? Is it off-putting while you're witnessing this?
Well, or you're just trying to the Entity case. This was 2 years after the Entity case, and actually this was just before Hollymont, which was a few months later in 1976. I guess the only thing that scares me are things that I know off potential threats. So if someone's got a gun or a knife, I'd be a little worried, but this stuff is like being at Disneyland and it's free. The chance of being harmed by this stuff in the real world is the likelihood of being hit with a meteorite in the next 5 seconds. It's astronomical. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, The whole water coming out of her nose, one hand cold, one hand extremely hot. We don't know. And then her friend drops off into a trance, and she starts screaming in a language that we've never identified. And if she was an actress, she could have won an Academy Award, this friend, the other girl living there. And we never could have whatever she was babbling in. We took it to linguistics at UCLA. They didn't know, never heard a language like this. They didn't know what it was. So, Susan and our friendship was rekindled, not romantically, even though there was an attempt at that. Her and her roommate, her girlfriends, became really upset. And as they did, the phenomenon took on a new twist to itself. The phenomenon became violent. Things were thrown at Susan. Her guitar was pulled out of her hands, slammed into the wall, shattered to pieces. Soap was thrown at her. Shoes were thrown at her. Instead of just something touching her behind or her breast, something was like fondling. It was more sexual in nature. And something was cutting her occasionally. Feel scratches from nowhere. And it just kept going and going. And, you know, she finally moved. And when she moved, it stopped. Now, I've known this girl. I mean, I have this girl on and off. She was married three more times. The last time I heard from her was in 2008. And I was giving a lecture somewhere, I forgot where. And I was talking about the case in a very generic manner. And, of course, I hadn't written the article yet. And at the time I was giving the lecture, she called and left a voicemail for me. So, okay. But see, what's intriguing about this, if this was current times, mm-hmm. we have instruments to take out and measure the environment and measure her and her two living girlfriends. But those technologies didn't exist in 1976. They were, and if they did, they weren't portable. They weren't handheld. They were massive, like, rack-mounted devices. So the case was unique in many respects because the other roommates, one of them was diagnosed paranoid schizophrenic. And as my friendship with Susan, you know, we talked, not regularly, but every so often. And the more we talked and the more things we did together as friends, the more upset the other girls got. And the more brutal the phenomena became. And it started literally, I mean, fires broke out in the kitchen from no source. What the worst was, I said, she's in the shower and blood's dripping from the shower head. And they took off the shower head and looked in the pipe. They couldn't find the source.
Now, is that considered kind of a form of apportation when you start having clear, you know, fresh water pouring out of her nose, blood pouring out of a pipe, and there's nothing there?
Well, unless there's an animal stuck in the pipe, which is unlikely, you shouldn't have blood coming out of it. And as far as fresh water coming out of her nose, it can't happen. We're not talking about, it's like someone put a fire hose in one ear and it was blowing out of her nose. And it was cold, fresh water. How do you fake that?
Right.
And, you know, things happened over and over again. See, at the time, we didn't know the diagnoses of the other two women. One of them was the paranoid schizophrenic, and we didn't know at that time that I didn't know that Susan was suffering from temporal lobe epilepsy. And it came and went, but not all the time. But Susan learned to manipulate others by feigning illness. And the minute something didn't go away, she'd pretend to be really sick, and she'd run up her bedroom, "I'm dying, I'm dying." And people would stop what they're doing and help her. And that's how she went through one, two, three, four, I think five husbands. And then when I talked with her again in 2008, she had a biventricular pacemaker and a valve replacement in the heart because of her smoking. So I said, "Do you remember I warned you about your smoking as a teenager?" No, she didn't remember. So this case is unique because everything was in the same place at the same time. And the events seemed to almost directly correlate with the state of mind of the three women who were sharing this three-bedroom home. And it was beautifully decorated. I mean, very lavish and, you know, big kitchen, dining room. But, you know, we weren't there all the time. But the case is unique because if the families involved, the families that helped give birth to Susan, if this got out and their names were known, it would tarnish both families forever. They would be looked at as insane. Because in the real world, people are still frightened by what they don't understand.
Right.
So if it isn't God, it's got to be the devil, and that's sort of the way it works.
Well, do you – okay. We've heard of women's menstrual cycles syncing up when they live together, and that seems to be a real fact. Do you believe that if there are people that are dealing with different psychological issues, and especially when you've got the frontal lobe issues with epilepsy.
Temporal lobe epilepsy.
Yeah. Right. Could she have been working like a like a router, and the other two were connecting to her, so this this kind of chaotic energy was running through all three of them?
It's all the whole thing's a confluence. All this stuff. In other words, there's a very intriguing interrelationship between very uniquely wired individuals, men or women. They could be of any age to a point, but not really, really old, and who have some neurochemical problems, like Susan had, and a geomagnetically active or electromagnetically anomalous environment. All that together, if working in the right way, produces an outcome. It's sort of like a DVD. Okay, you got a DVD in your hand. You want to watch it. What do you need? Well, you need the DVD player. You need the TV. You've got to be plugged in the wall. You've got to be able to operate both of them. If any part of the ensemble is missing, you get nothing on the screen. So some of these people I would describe as biological operational amplifiers, like Bank of America, but it's biological operational amplifiers. And others act as focal planes and waveguides. And the reason I had Susan visit another case we had a month later, the Hollymont case, was because I thought, well, okay, with all this stuff going around her, she might help bring it to life, activate more activity while we were there. It didn't work, except the place makes Susan really dizzy and nauseous. And at the time, we didn't know there were two reactor earthquake faults almost right under the house in Hollywood, and also a shallow river, which you could hear. But it's just, you know, if you want to shock, suffer from temporal lobe epilepsy, and all these things are going on. And so if we had modern instrumentation, we could have measured her. We could have measured the environment. Oh, here we go again. It's sort of like it's boring to the point now where we can predict what we're going to find, and we find it. You know, so who's the person has neurophysiological problems? And sometimes it's so subtle that one may not even be aware that they're seizure-prone. You may never have had a seizure, but you're seizure-prone. I knew an old friend of mine for like 40 years named Ron. He's a writer, producer, and the movie Natalie Wood made when she passed away, Brainstorm. So he went to see it, and there's a scene where there's a flashing light, and one of the lead females in the film, not Natalie, that another lady, she's in the lab, and she starts having a seizure because of the pulsating light in front of her. Guess what happened to my friend in the theater? He started having a seizure because the frequency of the pulsing light was enough to trigger his seizure, and boom, and suddenly, oh my God, I'm epileptic, I'm seizure prone. But he didn't know it up until that point. So people could live a whole life and never know they're either epileptic or seizure prone because it's never been kindled to a high enough level for the body to start convulsing.
So these people work as what we refer to as the poltergeist agent then, right? Are they the catalyst or the battery that seems to engage the environment around them and bring it to life?
Right. In other words, I don't think the energy's coming from them. My best guess and the evidence suggests that we live in a sea of energy, electromagnetic, geomagnetic. There's all sorts of energy, and there's, you know, microwaves everywhere, radio waves because of cell phones, and satellite TV and whatever. And it seems like these individuals are able to access this energy and put it to use. Because if it was self-injurious, think about this, and Susan Case, the biggest objects move weight a few pounds, maybe 7 or 8 pounds. But in other cases where objects move weighing hundreds of pounds, and or a person was actually thrown around Jeff Wheatcraft in the San Pietro case. And what's important for people to understand is, based on what we know about energy and reality, before something as massive as a 200-pound man or a 10-pound weight of some whatever, before that could be moved, if it's on a court free of physical contact, the energies we know of would very likely make you and everything in the room combust. You'd be ignited. You'd be burnt to a crisp. Everything would be ionized. Yet, not only do we not feel heat prior during these events, often the rooms seem to get colder, but that could be effect of a strong magnetic field, which make human hair, like a little the light hair we all have in our body, to become erect. That's a function of certain magnetic fields. But so I don't think we're creating the energy. I think we're tapping what's already there, and we're putting it to use in a very unusual manner. And
what do you believe is happening? You know, you mentioned the fact that it, you know, we should be, that kind of energy should be causing fires, but yet we feel the opposite, where it's cooling off or gets into this cold response. How is that possible?
Well, most known electrochemical reactions are exothermic. They emit energy. Okay, this seems to either be endothermic, which means it absorbs energy, or it's a form of energy we don't yet understand. So there's three ways these things might happen. One is energies we know of are working in a way we don't understand. Two is energies we don't know of work in a way we don't understand. And three, the combination of both. I think it's both. In other words, with instruments we have now, we can measure, biomagnetic fields and bioelectric fields with some degree of ease, although the magnetic field is really weak compared to the electric field. What I've seen over the decades is measure people. You see the same type of energy coming off their body, bioelectric, biomagnetic. And then you get around people who are seizure prone or epileptic, and woof, often their magnetic field is extremely high. And the phenomenon seems to occur around them. So I think what I wrote about in my book and my website is inductive coupling. There's somewhere something to do, our body resonates with the environment. And if we're unique enough inside, things happen. And they're all, this whole thing seems to be mediated by the unconscious or the subconscious. It's not like we think this and something happens. Another one of my cases written up in my book, either in the chapter Life with Poltergeist Agents or Poltergeist Agents Revisited, and another case, a woman named Kim, beautiful blue-eyed brunette. So she too suffered from temporal lobe epilepsy, which stuff happening around her. And she had a troubled childhood. She was kind of emotionally not the most sane person. And she would cut herself because she liked the pain. Why I'm mentioning this, years later, she was raped, unfortunately, so I don't know the details of it. But it is odd, you think, under what conditions, if all these things are flying around her, breaking, and machines turning on and off, and things of that nature, you'd think, and she's under the greatest amount of stress or duress or threat, that her body would utilize this ability to fight off the foe, and nothing. So that means that it has to occur in a different state of consciousness. We don't know. But the bottom line is, we're looking at the effect of an unknown cause. And so we have to look at data collected over a very long period of time. And then if it's patterned, we go, oh, that's interesting. Oh, we keep seeing this again and again and again and again. And, usually we used to think that as people got older, these events didn't happen as often. Well, that's what we thought. You know, I can testify to this myself. In getting older, I found that things are happening around me. In last place I lived in, there were really strange things happening, but only for the last couple of years. And I don't know what was triggering them. My cell phone disappeared. I had to go to a meeting, so I left without it. I come back to get a drink of water out of my refrigerator. I open the refrigerator, and my cell phone falls to the floor. A big bottle of medication disappeared. It was a padded mailer was sent to me, and I knew where it was. And a couple days later, I go to get it. The whole bag is gone, yet there's no one in my place to take it. I had friends over. We'd see coins rolling across the room, and there was no source. We'd hear banging noises. This weird object appeared in my cupboard. I didn't know what it was, but it was like a a circular piece of metal with a tripod leg for camping. You put your stuff on top of it, and you put the heat source beneath it. And I've never owned anything like that. So where did it come from? It was just little, and then, oh, a pair of shoes disappeared. Never found them. The box and the shoes vanished. Never saw them again. So I would think by my age, this stuff should never happen around me. But it is. Maybe, actually, you know, when a lot started happening, a case I worked on in Beverly Hills, on Cielo Drive. I don't want to go into that in depth, because it's on my website in two articles. After that is when things really started to happen around me without going out to investigate another case. They're happening, and it didn't scare me. It just was annoying because, you know, you're doing your thing, whatever you have to do on a daily basis, and things keep happening and things keep changing. And I bought a new computer, and it started malfunctioning right from the get-go. So they replaced it. Perfect working order. It started malfunctioning. It was a high-end Mac. It was an iMac. Oh, my other Mac worked fine, but it was old. So the new one is based in a different architecture. They use different, you know, chips than the old ones did. The old ones, they used Motorola, and now they use chips that are used across the board. So, you know, and I have problems with watches. Watches either don't run on me, run fast, and or stop. But I've never had a watch that worked on me for a very long period of time. I just gave it up. I even talk about that in my website, you know, and at what point you go, enough, why buy another watch? I'll be wasting my money. I might as well burn it. So,
well, what do you do? But do you have any form of epilepsy? I know we've talked about that on the show in the past, that seems
to
be part of this.
I've never been diagnosed. But I'll tell you something, Dave. Back in 48 years ago, I was being studied at UCLA as a psychic. And so they ran me through all these different tests, medical workups, say, but EEGs and everything imaginable, psychological tests. And then Dr. Thelma Moss wrote a study and me published years later in a medical journal. Okay. So I had three different set of EEGs run on my brain, and I wonder if that was going on. So they all came back very similar. The amplitude was extremely high, all centered around 10 hertz, 10 cycles per second. Which is you're not supposed to be at when you're talking, your eyes open. You're usually well over 14 hertz. You're in that beta region, which is normal light excitation. 10 hertz means you're either really relaxed or you're meditating, and you're sleeping. At 10 hertz or below, in delta sleep, which is the lowest range of EEG activity. But each time they ran me, this is before computers, so you hear the old stylus, the pen, ink pen slamming against the machine. I was generating sometimes up to 1,000 microvolts, which should kill you. And they asked me, ever had seizures? And I went, no. You sure? I said, I think I know. Nope, no seizures. But I might be seizure prone, and I'll never know it. Nothing's kindled a seizure within me. But, I mean, throughout most of my life, nothing has ever happened. I mean, I'd have mental phenomena happen, and precognition, the telepathy, the clairvoyant stuff, you know, okay. But no physical phenomena until about, I guess, 12 years ago, and then it started to happen. So, but again, I just have this feeling that visiting that one case, which made me very ill in 2005, I was there, 21 times, made me very ill, and that's why I refused to go back. And that seems to when when all this started around me. So that place seemed like it charged me and altered me in some way. Even though I left the environment, it continued to occur while I was not there.
Well, with the aristocratic poltergeist case that you were talking about as well, why does it stand out as something so unique in the kind of the pantheon of poltergeist cases that you've worked?
Because it's the most cases you hear about stuff, but we were there repeatedly. And the fact that, if you knew who this girl was, they don't even know she's alive, she might have passed away because she was a couple years older than me. If you knew who her real biological parents were, the word aristocratic would have significant meaning. You go like, oh. And again, she came from a really unique background, both mother and father. and everybody would go, oh my God. And it involves other actresses, but a couple of which are dead. There's another weird story that's sort of bizarre about this, linked to this girl. There's an actress who's passed away some time ago named Susan Strasberg. She was the daughter of acting coach Lee Strasberg. And she used to do TVs and movies, very attractive short brunette. So the mid-70s was either Mike Douglas or one of those talk shows that was on every day, Mike Douglas or Merv Griffin, was Susan Strasberg was on. And she was married, but she was divorced with a kid. They were asking her, who are you dating now? And she said, I'm dating a guy named Barry from UCLA's parapsychology lab. Now, Susan was about 12 or 13 years older than me. I never met her. So the next day or so, all these friends, you're dating Susan Strasberg? I went, I am. How does she know me? How does she even know my name? I spent a long time trying to figure this out. So a couple years ago, I spent a whole day online looking to figure out what the link between me and Susan Strasberg is. Then I went, okay, one of her best friends was the actress Shelley Winters, who's also passed away. Turns out Shelley Winters was Dr. Thelma Moss's best friend. Susan Strasberg met her husband through Shelley Winters. They had both visited the lab, even though I was never there. They probably came in at night or a weekend when I wouldn't be there. So there is this link. Why Susan thought we dated, I can't tell you. But this girl I know, Susan, the blonde, was in a really odd way linked to both Shelley Winters and Susan Strasberg. It's so odd that I met another guy. I was at a Xerox place, Xeroxing some business plans years ago, a place in West Hollywood, like 2 cents a page. I'll drive all the way there rather than paying 10 cents a page. So I'm there, and this tall guy, hey, how you doing, Barry? I go, hello? Don't you remember me? I said, nope. He told me his name, and I go, I still don't know you. He said, how are you? Well, you used to date my sister. Who? He told me his sister's name. I go, I know who she is. I've never met her. No, I used to take her out. You had your Corvette a long time ago. And I go, look, I know who she is. Why would I lie about knowing her or dating her? I said, look, I don't know what's going on. There's something really weird here. 3 weeks later, I'm at Arch Deli in Sherman Oaks in the San Fernando Valley having lunch with some friends. So we're there talking, and my friend sitting across from me, he says, hey, look, that girl keeps staring at you. Do you know her? And I went, oh, that's the sister of the guy I met. And why is she looking at you? He said, I don't know. Weeks later, I'm in the Xerox place again. There's this guy, the brother of this woman, saying, she was really angry you didn't come up and say hello. I go, I don't walk up to strangers, especially people in the entertainment industry, and start talking to them like I've known them my whole life. I don't know what you're talking about. And then she said to me, I said to him, how did I meet your sister? And he said, oh, Strasberg in Strasbourg. I go, okay, I'm leaving. So how do you make sense of all this? You can't.
No, strange synchronicities, just weird connections. And you know, it makes me wonder when you talk about that, and people have, and we've been talking about the Mandela effect on our show for quite a while, people having these false memories of other mm-hmm. things. And you talk about the fact how you're in a place and things are reporting into your home that don't belong right. there, that never were yours. I often wonder right. if those are remnants, if those are slip-throughs, bleed-throughs from alternate realities, parallel universes, not so much that it's a porting from point A to point B, but from point A to line 7, you know, that it's two different parallel right. universes and they're just brushing up against each other. And for that moment in time, if you will, mm-hmm. that location was perfectly set like a transporter from the Star Trek movies, right? And in that moment, as right. energy collided, mm-hmm. it left behind a remnant.
You know, we had a case in the early 70s in Van Nuys, California, in the San Fernando Valley, Van Nuys, and they were finding money appearing. They found $10 bills, 20s, 50s, 100s. And we're talking about thousands of dollars floating down from the ceiling. And they opened up, they went to the attic, stuffy there. I said to them, you have a problem with this? They said, no. I said, are you declaring it? Like, it didn't come to go, no. Well, then what's the problem? Where's it coming from? I said, who cares? You're getting free money. You're getting free money. And then a couple years later, we ran into another family. I forgot. I think it might have been down in San Diego. And they were, money was disappearing from their home around the same time it was appearing in the place at Van Nuys. I don't know. Back in my book, I talk about another case when I was teaching parapsychology at UCLA in Extension. It was like 1975, yeah, or 5 or 6. And there's this attractive blonde, blue-haired girl named Risa comes up to me. She goes, hey, Barry. I go, hello. Remember me? I went, nope. Like, you remember me? I go, nope. My father is your doctor. I go, I didn't even know I had a daughter. So one thing led to another. We started dating, no big deal. And every time we were together, weird stuff would happen. We're sitting watching TV at her place, and suddenly a can of Coke goes flying across the room, nowhere near either of us, okay? We're pulling up to the garage. It's raining. I said, you know, it's a shit. Her garage door opener had died. So I said, I get out and open it. So she touched me. Said, oh, thanks. And she did it. The garage door opened. We were in her bedroom once, and we hear music playing, except she hadn't put any records on. This is like, again, this is 42 years ago. So bear in mind, this before CDs or, you know, what they use now, digitally recorded music. Music comes on. Who put the records in the player? We didn't. It was one of my favorite groups. And I thought, okay. And then the weirdest part was, a few weeks later, I'm dreaming. And in my dream, I see her father, you know, my physician, floating upside down in water. Like, he looked motionless. And I saw her frantically swimming down to him, giving him mouth-to-mouth, I went, uh-oh. So I told her about it. I said, it's probably just a weird metaphorical. I wouldn't worry about it. A few days later, she goes and visits her parents that live in Beverly Hills. And she's out by the pool with their mom and dad. Her dad collapses by the pool and dies of a pulmonary embolism. That means his lungs filled with water. And she gave him mouth-to-mouth right by the pool. So what I saw was correct, although it was distorted. And that was the end of our friendship. I don't like this. I knew what it was, but I didn't tell her your dad's going to die, because, you know, who wants to hear that? And he wasn't that old. This was, you know, he's probably in his 50s, which is young.
Very strange. Barry Taff, our guest tonight. When we come back, Dr. Taff, I want to talk a little bit more about poltergeist, the type of energy that it takes to do the things that happen during these cases. And what tools would be good to measure this type of phenomena? Because there are so many investigators out there right now that are trying to find quantifiable evidence of this existing and trying to replicate it in laboratory settings, but it's just not happening. We'll talk with our guest, Barry Taff, Dr. Barry Taff, when we return.
Beyond the darkness.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Remember, I'm going to be hosting Coast to Coast AM this Saturday night, so you get an extra day with me. You can check it out by going to coasttocoastam.com/stations, and you'll find stations and areas around you to listen to the show, or just go ahead and download the free app, KNSI Radio app, and that's our home office here for recording our podcast and for doing live Coast to Coast AM. So you can listen to the show directly that way and keep up with us. We're on from midnight till 4 a.m. Central, and I'll be back on August 5th as the host of the show for Coast to Coast AM. I hope you'll check that out. Looking forward to it. Bobby Hart, musician, songwriter, will join me in the first hour. Henry Diltz, rock photographer to the stars, will join me in the last 3 hours as we talk about some of the most iconic and popular rock musicians in all history from a man who was there and witnessed it all. Hopefully the memories are still there, Tim. That's what I'm hoping.
Well, I hope so, too. Yeah.
We lived through the 60s and 70s. There's a lot of issues that could be burned out from that point. But
well, there's a lot of living to do in that
yeah,
era.
And he did a lot of living in that era. Henry Diltz will be my guest for the last 3 hours on that night. And then remember to jot me down. I'll be back on Coast to Coast AM on September 15th and September 16th. And on the 15th, I'll be joined by Michael Nesmith from the Monkees for the first 2 hours of the show, and then we'll open up phone lines for the remainder of the evening. So that's what's going on in our world. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. Our guest this evening, Dr. Barry Taff. Barry, with poltergeist activity, first of all, you mentioned a little bit earlier that the idea of getting hurt during, paranormal activity is, you know, there's probably a better chance of me getting hit by a meteor right now. But if there's that kind of burst of energy, if there's that kind of power being put out and things are flying around and strange light anomalies and even brain chemistry is being affected by it, is there a much higher rate of probability of injury?
Well, actually, the best analogy for what we're discussing here is this. Okay, imagine you're seeing the wake of a, you've got a river or a lake, and you see wakes being produced by a boat. You see the wakes in the waves going by, but you can't see the boat. All we're able to perceive is the effect that the boat has on the water. That's where we're at. That's where we've always been at. We can, all we know how to measure, all we can measure, or our machines are designed to measure, is what we know. So what are the forces in nature? There's electromagnetism, there's strong and weak nuclear, and there's gravitation. Maybe electro weak thrown in there. But the whole bit is based on the energies we know, the phenomena that are described, whether it's remote viewing or precognition or psychokinesis, can be explained by the energies we know of. All we're measuring is the way the environment is in some way modified or reacting to what's going on. But we're measuring no more than the wake the boat, invisible boat, produces.
Is poltergeist activity truly paranormal, or is it more normal than we expect? Is it more physiological as opposed to supernatural?
But see, here's the whole thing. Paranormal means something that goes beyond the normal. Well, this is what my book talks about, and I've been talking about this for decades. The best evidence indicates that long-term human memory may not be stored within our own brain. This is an implicate order. The idea that there's a real cloud out there, not a cloud we produced, but some kind of metaphorical cloud which our own memories are stored within. And when our ability to access that cloud diminishes, well, we call that senility, call that Alzheimer's, call it dementia. We can't access the image, information. If this is true, and I think it is, based on what I've read, that means that the way we perceive reality and remember our past is paranormal in nature, because if our memories aren't stored in our own brains, then the only way we can get at them is by accessing something remote from our body. Well, that's paranormal by definition. So that means paranormal is normal. There is no paranormal. What's, again, the energy, when you see a 200-pound man picked up and thrown against the wall like a rag doll, and his clothing and the furniture in the room are not heated to the point of combustion, and he doesn't suffer third-degree burns over his body, that's telling us something really important. It's telling us that there's another energy, call it zero-point energy. I like that because it encompasses a broad range of activity or phenomenon, and it seems to be the only thing that makes sense. And we're still playing around with instrumentation to measure electromagnetic fields and, different elements of that. And, measuring gravity may show us something in the end, but we don't have little tiny instruments to measure gravity yet. But even that isn't the point, is that we can't measure what we don't know. What is it? And how do you build something to measure if you don't know what it is? So it's kind of a catch-22.
Right, but wouldn't there be, there's already equipment that can measure every possible wavelength of energy, basically, that we're aware exists. If this is already taking place, you would think that it would be tipping, like a seismograph, it would be tipping off scientists from a distance because of that kind of energetic outburst or implosion.
Right. Well, see, here's the thing. If you don't know what to look at, for example, I wouldn't look in the radio frequency spectrum for anything to do with these phenomena. It's not microwaves or RF energy. My guess would be ultra-low frequency and extremely low frequency electromagnetic fields that also couple with gravity. It, see, again, if we were the generator of these forces based on what we know, every time we did this, we'd be destroying ourselves. We'd be inflicting great harm to our own body. And that doesn't occur. In parapsychology, there's two types of psychokinesis. There's the microscopic type that don't affect random event generators or computers or the old Schmidt boxes from back in the late 60s or through the 70s. And those are somewhat controllable, but they can lead to tremendous exhaustion on the part of the person working with it. Then on the other end, you have the macroscopic psychokinesis, which is the poltergeist activity, which is not controllable, which is random, is recurrent, but there's no stress or a sense of fatigue seen on the part of the people these occur around. And again, in every time we measure the energy around these individuals, and in normal people, if we took 100 people off the street, put them in a room, measuring their magnetic field would be impossible with handheld instruments because they're not that sensitive yet. You have to put them in specially secured environments that shield out the Earth's magnetic field. But if the people are poltergeist agents, the majority of which are seizure prone or epileptic, you measure these incredible biomagnetic fields coming from them. What a coincidence. So that energy is coupling with the energy around us, the Earth energy, so to speak. And if that's utilized properly or mediated properly, these events occur. How that works, million-dollar question. Whoever figures this out would basically control the next 100 years on Earth, because if you're able to tap into ubiquitous energy that you could put to use to do physical work. See, again, when have objects that are a great mass are moved, force equals mass times acceleration. It's physics. Yet that produces heat. This doesn't produce heat.
Right.
So we're looking at a whole different arena than anything we've been used to before. I mean, I don't care what instruments we have. We're still measuring the wake of the invisible boat in the water. Or the other story that I told, I think, in my book, the three blind men. One blind man touches the elephant's trunk and thinks it's the hose. Nope. The other touches the elephant's tail and thinks it's the rope. Nope. The third touches the elephant's leg. It's a tree trunk. They're all wrong. Why? Because they can't see the elephant. They don't know what it is. They only can direct their perception based on what they directly perceive with their senses. So here we are, same situation.
And I get that. Everybody's perception is going to have a different angle on reality when it comes to these moments. But yet you're in situations where you've been there and watched activity kind of erupt in front of a large grouping of people. Is there anything, any kind of measurable nuclear fallout, if you will, on people like that are sharing the entity case, the Doris Beithar case. Did that leave any kind of residual?
25 people. Yeah, 25 people in this little bedroom in Culver City in August of 1974, and it was amazing. It was hot. There was no air conditioning, and all these things were flying around, and luminous anomalies were appearing. And yet most of what we observed, we couldn't photograph, and what we photographed, we never saw, which is, of course, an anomaly. So this is what it comes down to, is that, again, not a matter of perspective. Our level of perception is based on what our eyes and ears are bent to perceive, based on the way we're designed. So anything that falls below or above that, we're not going to see. We're not going to, because we may feel something odd, but we're not designed to perceive it. So we can't see infrared light or ultraviolet light or X-rays, because if we did see the higher frequencies, it would very likely damage us, because they're ionizing. The low frequencies can affect you in other more subtle ways, but just as profound. So the thing is, what is it that we're perceiving, and why is it that, see, some people, what I would think, if you put 10, 12 people together who are all poltergeist agents in a geomagnetically active environment, could you then trigger the events? Who knows? Very unlikely. I think each person has a unique resonant frequency that's their own. The same way you could have 10 people in a room with cell phones, and there's no cross crosstalk. In other words, you're not hearing them, they're not hearing you. They each have a very specific wavelength linked to their phone that no one else does in that room. Yet they're all hearing a conversation. So yeah, it may be as simple as that. It, you know, what it comes down to is that see, the whole thing, these things challenge our concepts of reality. How can you perceive the past when you weren't there? How can you see the future that hasn't occurred yet? You can't see a future. How can you see an event that have not yet transpired? Well, there's we're guessing. It's coincidence. Yeah, right. How many coincidences make a fact? 10? 100? 1,000? Million? Billion? Trillion? So how long you keep repeating the same thing without learning anything? If you can't lure this stuff into a lab to produce it under controlled conditions, you got to collect data over a really long period of time, hoping that it'll show patterns. And the patterns are there. So rather than keep redoing the same thing over and over again, you got to look beyond that point. It's, you know, like the case I worked on in Cielo Drive. A high percentage of the people going there when I was investigating the case from 2005 to 2006, a large percentage of the people going there got ill who had no pre-existing conditions, yet while there, they were there, they got sick in one way or another. And a friend of mine, this woman I knew, a psychologist, she was going to go there with her nephew, and I pleaded with her not to because her health was quite poor. And she didn't go, but she sent her nephew. And he didn't know about what was going on in the house or the environment. He got there within an hour and a half. He was sick. So, again, what's making the people sick? The strong magnetic field. Our body doesn't like magnetic changes. It sometimes responds very poorly to that. So it's all interconnected, but how? And bottom line with all this is we know for a fact that if we pulse lights in front of our eye, like closed eyes, you can drive certain brainwave activity called photic driving. I think it may be possible to drive paranormal phenomena, not the mental type, but the physical type, psychokinetic, where you could drive them to make them happen rather than wait, but you run the risk of hurting, if not killing, people when you do so. So it's something I wouldn't recommend because you're more likely to harm people than do some good.
Do you believe that we survive the physical body, Barry? Not just in the idea that energy continues to go on, but do you believe that a physical, or not a physical, but a cognitive consciousness does survive outside of our form?
Yes and no.
Okay.
In one respect, I think the ghosts, for example, the concept of disembodied, discarnate intelligence is far more complicated. I don't think necessarily, we know what being born is, and we know what dying is. But the question is, does consciousness exist prior to our being in our bodies, and does it continue after our bodies can no longer sustain us? I'd say yes, but I think that it goes beyond that. We're looking, I don't think we stop with the tip of our toes and tip of our nose. I think consciousness exists prior to our being in a container, our bodies, and may continue long after the container's gone. The question is, in what form? And what can we do about it? Can we put that knowledge to use to better ourselves, to better the human condition? Again, it was interesting in some of the more interesting literature coming out of ufology. Supposedly, some of these beings of the different races that visited described us as containers. Containers? Pretty ghoulish way of looking at the human being. Containers. Yeah, we're animated by life. Okay, well, what is it? Well, when the physical mechanism that's animated can't sustain itself, it stops. And then whatever it is that animates us goes somewhere else. Or maybe it was always there to begin with. If you lived before, that means you're living again. So, okay, we know what the idea is, past lives are. Well, if you're living in the past, well, that means aren't you also living in the future? It's all the same. Just a question of how you perceive the difference. There may not be a lot of difference between the past and the future, meaning We know we can't control the past. We can't change the history of our lives. Can we change the future? And that's, I wrote an article, one of my articles, a website called Precognition, The Shape of Things to Come. And I talk about some rather interesting experiences I've had, which to me suggests that the future is as immutable as the past is. And if we try to change that, if we try to insert our influence, we're going to be in for a shock. That's what I think based on my experiences and others I've run into. But the notion of free will is at the core of humanity. And if that's shattered, we're in trouble. If we have no, we can't control where we're going. We can control how we react, but we can't control the events.
Do you really feel that we have free will in this case, though? I mean, if there are precognitive dreams and you're able to sit in Bakersfield, California, and focus your intention and tell me what's going on in Paris through remote viewing, doesn't that kind of supersede free will, that the fact that if these things are going on? And
if it's real time, okay, we know that telepathy isn't bound by space, and precognition can see forwards, and recognition can see the past. The whole point of it is we're accessing information that's remote from our physical body, and we know that could occur in time as well as space. But in other words, another example, 47 years ago, I met a girl in college. We were dating and was sharing. She looked like the actress Jane Krakowski, almost identical to what Jane Krakowski looks like. So we were dating, and it was great. Came to the lab once and found it interesting. So we're dating. She lived way in the northwestern San Fernando Valley, and I lived in West Los Angeles. So anyway, the dream started after we're seeing each other. The dreams, and they're always the same. I'm in the back seat of a car. I see her in the passenger seat. I couldn't see me in the driver's seat. I just saw a guy with dark hair. I couldn't see the dashboard. We turn into the cul-de-sac of where she lived in the valley, and a larger car flies out and hits us head on. It was terrible. A glass explosion. It was just terrible. The smoke clears. I'm still in the back seat, and I see the driver is all bloodied, and I see Sharon is all bloodied and kind of motionless. I went, oh, this isn't good. The dreams kept happening again and again and again and again. And finally, I said, got to tell Sharon. So I told her, and she looked at me. You know, she said, you could have been a little more creative about your lie. I go, what? You just don't want to see me because I live too far away from you. I said, gas is 18 cents a gallon, 20 cents a gallon. Who cares? And I said, look, this is about saving our lives. And she went, yeah, right. I said, look, it's not worth it. If we're both dead, what good is it going to do us? And she goes, no. And she got fed up, thought I was lying. I don't believe her. The reverse was done to me, if the same thing happened, I might not believe the girl. Because, you know, that's our nature. And so, you know, time went by. She started dating someone else. And some time went by, and boom, there was the accident right where I saw it. The driver was killed, her new boyfriend, and she was badly injured. I didn't change anything except my ego put me in the driver's seat in my dreams. Well, I assume Sharon is there. Must be driving. No, I misinterpreted the future. Did my knowledge change the future? We don't know. This is where it becomes sticky. How much free will do we have? There's been a Twilight Zone episode where at the end, Rod Serling's closing narration goes that the skein of events might be such that some events can be changed while others cannot. And I reference this, I think, in that article, in my article. We don't know. And I just got this weird feeling in the end we're not going to like what we find, because it's going to tell us of reality that we're not as we don't have that much control over it as we thought we did. That's my gut. And we may not be able to change it. So what do you do?
Well, what do you do? I mean, it seems, you know, if people are able to communicate telepathically, which there have been pretty interesting studies on that and really interesting results, if there are people that are able to influence physical matter, I would think being able to influence time, in a sense of time travel, maybe not physically, but psychologically, mentally, if energy exists and kind of coexists at all times, why shouldn't we be able to push messages forward or backward to ourself, at least kind of in the quantum leap theory, you know, that time travel within yourself and within your timeline is possible. Could we theoretically push that?
How do we know See, I agree with what you're saying. I understand it. But what if that mechanism is in place? What pushed me to stop dating Sharon 47 years ago? The knowledge, the dream, something's telling me this is going to be a horrible accident. Don't go in the car with her. I didn't. Her new boyfriend died, and she was badly injured. And she suffered her whole life. She's been somewhat crippled because of it. So was it the sense, my knowledge of the future is what gave me the dreams, which is what ended my relationship with her, which is what prevented me from dying with her, you know, instead of the boyfriend.
Right. So you did, in effect, influence time.
Well, right. But unless that was the way it always was. It's a big what if. I suspect that if we could time travel with a machine, we'd find it's very different than we think of in science fiction. That's my guess. That
right.
You'd go back and watch the past and, whoa, just be amazed by what you'd see. Could you then intervene? Well, let's say you want to go back a couple thousand years. Atoms didn't exist then. The machine didn't exist then. So how could you be there when you never were? Well, you can't.
Well, and we're also in a different place in the universe. People are always assuming that with time travel that the gravitational metrics would be the same. And if you're putting yourself out there, we wouldn't be then held or yield to the gravitational pull of our planet. If we wanted to go back 200 years, our planet was in a different spot in the universe.
Right, because space and time are basically connected. So you'd have to not only move with time, you'd have to move to where the Earth was at that point in time.
Right.
Otherwise, you'd be sitting in space. So again, this gravity holds to the Earth, and that's a theory that's never been dealt with in a movie. Like, okay, so you jump back 100 years. Hey, what are we doing in the middle of space? Well, the Earth's way over there on the other side of the sun. What? Well, you didn't bother to contemplate where the Earth was in orbit in that year. In that month, that day.
And that's why I've wondered often with the idea theoretically, again speaking, when it comes to a haunting, when a place is haunted that has no death associated with it, could it be that the energetic signature of that spot has shifted? So maybe 100 years ago, a woman died, you know, 7 degrees north, 32 degrees west, right? Mm-hmm. And now that the planet has shifted and the polar tips have changed, that is a different geographic location on the planet now. And that may explain why her energy resonates in that location, but there's no story of a haunting or why there would be energy there.
Right. Or it could be that because of a unique geomagnetic signature, entering that environment creates something for you that allows your mind to access information it wouldn't otherwise. It's, like I said, we're all tied into this. It's not like we're on the side looking in. If we were sitting in a room right now that became a time machine and we could move around like in a movie, I have a feeling the past we could watch till cows come home, no problem. But if you go to the future, you jump 100 years forward in time, so it's 2117, and people, if they were alive that knew it, think, where have you guys been? You've been gone for yes, it was second. You can't go back and relive the time you missed because you weren't there. We weren't there. We were missing for a century. So it's not like a movie. Seeing the future, the past might be really easy. Intervention might be a whole nother thing. There were two Twilight Zone episodes that dealt with it. There was one with, well, two of them. Actually, Russell Johnson was in both. The one where the one where he goes back in time to save Lincoln, and he doesn't remember enough of the assassination to actually prevent it, and comes back to the future. There was change, but not what he wanted to affect. He wanted to prevent Lincoln from being assassinated. Great episode. Another one where Albert Salmi, the actor, is about to be hung in the Wild West for a murder, and he disappears from the hangman's noose. It's called Execution. It's a great episode. He appears in the time machine of Russell Johnson in 1960 or whatever it was, and Russell Johnson makes the great lines, utters the great line. I know this is very scientific, but I don't like his looks. In the end, Albert Salmi, the guy was plucked from the past, kills Russell Johnson. But then he's killed by a modern burglar who gets trapped in the modern time machine, goes back, and his body appears in the hangman's noose in the Wild West. They go, look at his clothes. That's not Joe Caswell. Could we do that? Could things like that happen? We don't know. The odds are no, because it's movies. It's not reality. So it gets real sticky. And I got a feeling that we're not going to like what we find. That's my gut. There are, just like everything else, the rules, regulations, and laws that will dictate what we can and can't do. We don't know them yet because we haven't been there.
I would guess, I would think, Barry, that we would have made much bigger strides in the field of parapsychology even since your time at UCLA. But it seems like it's stagnated, that there's really no new information, even though we've got new technology, new testing methods. Why do you think nothing has progressed, really, in this field in 30, 40 years?
Well, I know this for a fact. One of the reasons the government really stopped using remote viewing and the programs fell apart was, for one, a lot of the government, in people, the government thought it was the devil's work. Well, this isn't the work of God, so it's the devil. Bible thumpers, people, no, can't, the work is evil, you can't do it. What? But that's how people thought. It's not, can't do it, it's too evil, it's malicious, we can't do this, it's not under God. And I heard, I couldn't believe it, I was hearing this, yep. And of course, the fear is, well, if we can do it to our enemies, whoever they were at the time, could remote viewers do it to our politicians today? Of course they could. There is no effect, but space and time or barriers don't affect it, as far as we know. Then the problem is, hey, we don't want it used against us, and why the DOD hired and the DIA hired professional debunkers to rewrite the history of remote viewing to make it appear as if none of the research resulted in anything credible. All the stuff that came out of the work back in the 70s and the 80s, it's all guessing. It's all, we were misinterpreted. We're all a bunch of idiots. And that's the way they wrote it, to make everyone look like fools. So we wasted some tens of millions of dollars. No big deal. Hey, let's do something else. Let's go build a more powerful bomb. And so there's, the reason UCLA hated our old lab is because it was politically incorrect, even in those days, before the term existed. Politically incorrect. Oh, no. There was psychosurgery being done at UCLA, orbital undercutting, all that stuff, long before I was there and, went on. And that was getting a lot of negative press. The last thing that university needed was to be linked to parapsychology. It's like a double negative. So if you can't make a lot of money with something and you can't kill people with it in the real world, academia goes, what good is it?
Yeah, that's the brutal sadness of it.
We can't kill you. And then, it was interesting. You all know what remote viewing is, but the word remote, the term remote influence, is almost never used. Instead of perceiving things at a distance, this is where you affect things at a distance, meaning mind-matter interaction, but not right in front of you, but maybe hundreds of thousands of miles away. So instead of knowing what your enemy and who knows where North Korea or Iran is doing or China, whatever, Timbuktu, doesn't matter. Instead of seeing, you couldn't cause them to have a myocardial infarction, they collapse and they die. And apparently the government doesn't want to talk about it, so when that subject comes up, they stop. Because I'm not going to cite names because your listeners would know who some of these people are, but I was amazed when I brought this up in interviews, in discussions like we're having now, and some of them did not react well. I didn't want to talk about it. Why? Because the government doesn't want it talked about. Okay, we know what remote viewing is. Everyone's heard of it for the most part. Remote influence, let's not start that whole thing going again. So, if it really worked, we wouldn't need to fight our enemies with weapons. We could kill them remotely, right? So,
They've worked on that, though, right? I mean, there has been
reports they did work on it. Remote viewing is pretty easy to replicate. We were doing work in it at UCLA before it was formally done at SRI and all that. And, and the DIA controlling it, and Dr. Edwin May was involved. A lot of good work was done. And you remember the movie out called Staring at Goats years ago?
Right.
10 years ago? That was one of the most idiotic films I ever saw. It was like a big joke to make it look like the whole thing was a big joke.
Yeah, Men Who Stare at Goats with Clooney.
Yeah, the director. It was like when they made the movie about the thing in West Virginia. Point Pleasant, West Virginia.
The Mothman Prophecy. Yeah, Mothman Prophecy.
The real case is extraordinary. I mean, great information written up in books. And the movie made it all look like hysteria and nonsense. No, it's the director didn't believe in it, so he wanted to make sure no one else did. And so, with all the great technology, and it was good acting. It's just that it, in the end, you go, what? Huh? So, no, it's, yeah, it's the whole thing. The government can do one thing well, and that's lie. They're very effective liars, and they're very, very attractive ways to, you know, I said one of the biggest, most disturbing elements of government's lying. In the last year or two, there have been a lot of discussion about the real reason JFK was murdered. This has been on a couple of shows, and Ancient Aliens or something like that, or one of these shows. And the belief is that, well, we know for a fact that John F. Kennedy was demanding the CIA release evidence of crashed UFOs and bodies. They didn't call them like spaceships and whatever you call an EBE, great ship, and their occupants or bodies. And he demanded that, and they went, no, we don't want to do it. He supposedly told Marilyn Monroe about it. And she was dead shortly thereafter because she was going to use it against him. It probably went in her diary. They were monitoring her room, her home. She's dead shortly thereafter, which is a little odd. And then Kennedy demands immediate declassification, public disclosure, and they don't respond. There's a memo which has been circulated around where they said they have to make them wet to prevent disclosure. Making wet means kill, you know, destroy or, you know, assassinate. And very shortly after he puts this pressure on the CIA, he's murdered. So to me, if this is true, if there is a link between them, it'd be the biggest disinformation ploy in the history of the human race. If this, whoever these people are, if they're willing to kill the president of the United States to protect the most closely guarded secret on earth, what else will they do? What else will they do? It's just very unnerving. The whole thing is very disturbing to me because most people have never heard of it. And if they did, they'd laugh at it. So we're made to think, oh, it's some nut job. One guy with a poor rifle and mediocre performance in rifle range. He successfully fires off all around, kills the president, wounds Governor Connally. Oh, it must be Russia. Oh, no, no. It must be this. It must be Cuba. Oh, no, no. It must be the CIA. I don't know. It must be the mafia. I don't know. And then now, wait a minute. Now the evidence it's completely has nothing to do with what we thought. It's not in right field or left field. It's over our heads. And for some reason, I even have things on my website talking about this, about Marilyn Monroe, JFK, and UFOs. I mean, I didn't come up with this information. Other people did. It is, to me, the most frightening thing I've heard in my life.
Yeah, it definitely is. That possibility in killing our own president.
Yeah,
yeah.
Over this.
Yeah.
I mean, forget all about the mafia and what he and his brother did when they became in office, and the mafia helped put him in, you know, get him elected and the whole bit, and then he turns against him with his brother Bobby. It's so confused that there's no way of ever knowing what happened, but something in my gut is telling me that there is a connection between the president's demand for disclosure on this subject matter and his immediate, almost imminent death.
Yeah, it kind of makes you wonder about pushing too far to try to get these answers. Does it put you on the chopping block?
Well, if you can't come forward with information, it's, you know, perfect. No, it's like if you can't come forward with a dead alien body that isn't faked, right, or a piece of extraterrestrial technology that we can't even think about, no one's going to pay attention. They're going to think you're nuts.
Right.
So that's the problem.
Well, Dr. Barry Teff, it's always a pleasure catching up with you. I want to thank you so much for spending some time with us this evening, and we'll look forward to catching up with you when your new book comes out, hopefully by the end of this year, beginning of next year.
Okay, I appreciate your interest, and we'll stay in touch. Okay, thanks a lot, Dave.
You've got it. Dr. Barry Teff, we have his information up on our site, barrytaff.net. You can read some of the most fascinating articles and documents that he's posted and shared from his remarkable career as a parapsychologist. That's it for tonight. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Beyond the Darkness.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Time for a sofa upgrade? Visit washablesofas.com and discover Anabay, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices, with sofas starting at $699. Anabay brings you the ultimate in furniture innovation with a modular design that allows you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabay is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slides right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get up to 60% off plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.